Off the Ball Rugby.
Pretty incredible. Only Johnny Sexton really could do this. So look, I know he was a de facto coach anyway. You know, I would imagine there's a few coaches out there whose noses are probably out of joint by this.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
You're welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Hope you had a wonderful bank holiday weekend. Tonight, come 10 o'clock, come the time we're off air, we should know the first of the finalists for this year's Champions League. Inter Milan 3, Barcelona 3 resumes at 8 p.m. tonight. So we will have Dan McDonald with us live in the football show from 9 p.m. to watch that with us. And we'll also be discussing the Stephen Bradley, Damien Duff beef with him there as well. From 7:30, we're going to have Darren O'Sullivan and Colin Boyle on the line to reflect on the Connacht and Munster football finals over the course of the weekend. And our 8 o'clock hour tonight is solely the company of Brian O'Driscoll, because it's another year, another desperately disappointing conclusion to a European campaign for Leinster. So Brian's take on everything that happened on Saturday is coming your way after 8. We'd love to hear your thoughts as well, Leinster fans, non-Leinster fans. What do you think? 0879 180 180 is our number if you want to drop us a WhatsApp. Cameron Hill, a very good evening.
Steve.
Mick McCarthy, how are you?
Good, not too bad.
Very strange thing happened to me on Saturday while watching this Leinster game. 17 minutes on the clock. Leinster were 7 points to 3 down, I think, at that point. Free kick at a scrum. Gibson Park takes a quick, passes it off to Sam Prendergast. Sam Prendergast gives this long pass over to Tommy O'Brien on the right wing. And as he was running over the try line, my right arm reacted fist pump.
Whoa.
I know. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it that I've reacted in such a way. And I said to myself, well, look, I mean, Leinster were 19-point favourites for this game. Guaranteed win from here. So at least if I've reacted in a somewhat joyful manner for Leinster in this moment, I can at least embrace this feeling at the end when Leinster are in the winner's enclosure. So unfortunately, as things panned out, the schadenfreude was taken away from me here. So if people were expecting any sort of Munster-based Cheshire cat-like smiling, they're not going to get that.
You weren't wearing a Northampton jersey.
No, no.
Okay.
I've always had a sort of a, it goes against all other sporting principles, but for rugby, for some reason, it's always been a support the Irish provinces, you know. So it's like, I'm a Munster fan, so I never want Leinster to win when they're playing Munster. I'd probably never want them to win when they're playing Connacht or Ulster either, to be honest. But yeah, the rest of the time, I do generally want them to win. I don't know about cheering for them. I don't know if I'm quite at that level, but I would prefer that they won the game.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. Not that that matters all that much, I guess, but I don't know. You haven't let, for me anyway, that's not as cardinal a sin as you celebrating, like, you know, Dublin winning the All-Ireland or something.
Has that always been the case with you? How far does that go back?
Or it goes back to always. It's because rugby is such a, the rugby team that we watch is such an international based sort of. Yeah.
We were actually chatting out in the office with Eve earlier on, who's a Tottenham fan, and I was saying that if it's Tottenham versus Manchester United in the Europa League final this year,
you can call it the Conference League final if you want.
That I'd actually be cheering for Tottenham, which might be even stranger. But
that's got to get you excommunicated.
Yeah,
from some
probably will. I shouldn't have said that on national radio. But when it comes to this, I guess like there is the obvious connection between Ireland and Leinster, and I definitely remember having this conversation with somebody after the 2023 defeat to La Rochelle, where I was kind of like, you know, if you're a Munster fan, you can totally take joy in this with the Ronan O'Gara element. And they kind of made the point, World Cup year, this does not bode well for Ireland potentially being in a tight game later this year, etc. And they were proven correct. And look, it's not a World Cup year this year, but definitely any of the misgivings you might have had about Irish rugby, they don't get diminished by watching that conclusion.
No,
there
was
Leinster.
A lot of concern.
Yeah, a lot of concern. I think there was, like, we look at sort of next year and the fact that they're bringing in Rico Ioane, you think, okay, they're going to be fine in the long run. But I definitely felt, even at the start of the year when they had RG Snaeman coming and Rabah Samani in and Jordy Barrett especially, that you just feel no matter what happens afterwards, if Leinster don't get over the line this year, it'll really, really hurt and look bad. Considering how close they've come, they've played two different oppositions in finals, you feel that there has to be some sort of IP there, that we've got this hurt, we know what we've done wrong, and we can get over the line this year. The only difference this year is it's not a final, it's a semi-final.
That makes it worse, doesn't it? This makes it the worst of certainly these last 4 years, I would suggest. Like the Saracens won is kind of the last time
there was like a not an acceptable conclusion, but maybe an understandable conclusion. It's felt that there's been plenty of criticism after the two La Rochelle defeats, plenty of criticism last year after the two Lose defeat, and then loads of criticism this year.
Yeah.
But this year is the worst of those four, I would suggest.
But I think the criticism is because of the compound nature of the whole thing, because it's been the 4 years in a row and I'm not winning it. I think they can have a bad game like this, you know?
I'm not sure I agree with that. I think that in isolation, like you take the fact that they were 19-point favourites to win this game
that
on
was
Saturday.
Bullshit, though. I should too early for that kind of language, but we talked all the actual in-depth conversations like we had on this show and like we had many other places about that suggested that the fact that Leinster fans weren't going to this game was crazy. The fact that, you know, that this was being taken for granted was crazy, that the bookies' prices were crazy, that this was a much closer game. Look at the semi-final they had just last year, for example. You know what I mean? The idea that Northampton are just going to show up the way the previous two English teams showed up to Dublin was never going to happen. 19 points was nonsense.
Maybe.
Sorry, there's a separate point.
Yeah, like, obviously, it's turned out to be nonsense in hindsight.
I feel like those,
even beforehand, it's always kind of hard to go back and actually find out what the prices were for all the different games. The 2022 game, Leinster were 11.5-point favourites for that, and then 8-point favourites the following year against La Rochelle. I couldn't find what it was last year against Toulouse, but you can be sure it was
less,
pretty. They were favourites, but very slight favourites. So this was, in the eyes of those trying to predict this, the biggest margin that Leinster were due to win one of these big games by.
Yeah, so it was in the Aviva.
And it was in the Aviva. You use that as your basis, and for me, this is the most spectacular defeat of the four. But then you throw in the compound nature as well, and the story gets
I think
a hell of a lot grimmer.
It is the most spectacular defeat. I would completely agree with that. My question with Leinster is, see, like, it's hard to say this and sound like you're not dismissing Northampton. I thought Northampton were brilliant at the weekend and well done to them. Like, you know, and I genuinely mean that. They're a very, very good side. They've got a few superstars in that team that we probably don't even know the half of yet because some of them are quite young. And I think we'll probably see a few of them in Australia this summer. Like, this is a very, very good team, right? So let's take into account that they played brilliantly. Leinster are better than them. And you know how I know Leinster are better than them? It's because they played terribly. And yet every time it looked like the game was over, Leinster were able to score. And actually, if it had gone on another 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you feel like Leinster probably would have won the game. You know, and that suggests to me that there's an issue here. These players, the majority of them, when the opportunity is there to win something for Ireland, have won it, right? But there's something wearing blue at the moment. There's a white line fever. There's something wrong. Mm. Because this team, regardless of one performance on Saturday or three finals that were all toss of a coin, if they're toss of a coin, you should be winning one of three, at least. And now they've lost 4 years in a row. They haven't won a tournament that they've been arguably the best team in. It's a big indictment. Like, you know, you have to have a serious question about everything. The structures, the players, the coach for sure, you know?
Here's where I disagree with that. Is that that they've always been there or thereabouts. I remember someone, a South African fan, talking to me last year about how annoying it is to play Ireland because they never die and they're always like right in the fight, right till the death.
Yeah.
But as you say, there have been a couple of occasions in the last couple of years, notwithstanding that that quarterfinal at the World Cup, where when it's come down to it and there's been a cigarette paper between an Irish team and a really good opposition, it's been the really good opposition that managed to get over the line. What I think is the difference this time is that because of the nature of the last 16 and the quarterfinal wins, there is, and there tends to be with teams like this, an assumption that we're just going to play our game plan and no one's going to be able to compete with that. The fact that Porter was on the bench, that's what Leinster have been doing all year though. And they've been bringing him on as this impact player to play those 60 or 70 minutes in sort of backloading that work for him so that he comes on and he's almost like a fresh pair of legs 20 minutes into a game. That's what they've been doing. But they didn't count for the fact that Keane Healy would be under huge pressure from a really good Northampton scrum. I think maybe Jordy Barrett was part of that, where they thought they'd have these finishers, a la the Neen Aber sort of playbook. Too often it's been, the Leinster way is so good that we don't have to adapt to our opposition.
Yeah, but that's it. Like, I mean, is that why the coaching should be under serious pressure? Because if Andrew Porter can play 75 minutes in a test match for Ireland, then he can play more than 60 or more than 50 for Leinster in a semi-final if you think this is the biggest game of your season. Well, if you don't, then maybe you start Keane Healy and you don't worry too much about it and you say, oh, we'll get the most out of Porter later on.
I think on your point about Leinster being better than Northampton, like, better includes mentality and how you approach a game.
Sure, yeah. Ability, like, I suppose I meant.
To be fair
to
Northampton, like, something that has been mentioned but is worth reiterating is that Northampton weren't even at full strength for this game. George Furbank, George Hendy, both missing for this game. A couple of more people that aren't coming to mind at the moment. Their pack was a little bit depleted, right? And I think they probably would have given they have a better version of themselves on paper that wasn't even there in Dublin on Saturday. And the fact that I certainly think that Leinster didn't start their best 15 maybe suggests an idea that Leinster were going to progress. Yeah. They didn't think it was going to be easy, but they predicted that maybe
they should be winning.
The cards were in their favour. So, I don't know. There's a lot of very obvious, very big questions, which we'll put to Brian after.
One of the questions is tomorrow we're getting a Lions squad. Like, for me, I think you're looking
Thursday.
I think you're looking at absolute, like, Irish bias if Sam Prendergast is on the plane at this stage. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that Sam Prendergast isn't potentially a great player, but for me anyway, the occasion looked huge. For him on Saturday, you know, and that's fine. That's what you would expect from somebody at his age who's played the amount of rugby he has. And we just have to be careful about calling people the next people, you know, someone. And you know, just this guy's career could be defined by us all deciding he's a superstar before he actually has a chance to become a superstar.
Yeah.
For an out half, he's insanely young. And there's a part of me that wishes he wasn't thrown into the Irish team so early in this year because we could be more excited, as opposed to now everybody's like, oh, well, you know, he's not actually that good. It's like, he will be. But right now, I don't think he's there yet. And the idea that he'd be one of the four best out halves in Britain and Ireland seems nonsense.
It does. We should get stuck into the news round tonight. We've got plenty on this coming in the 8 to 9 hour this evening with Brian. The news round is with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. Cameron, where are we starting?
Start with the Champions League, because Inter are hosting Barca for the second leg of their Champions League semi-final tonight. An absolutely cracking first leg. You'll remember the two sides drew 3-3 in the first leg in Montjuic last week. And Barca boss Hansi Flick says the message is simple for his young squad this evening.
What I want to see for my team is that they enjoy it, to show how good we can play as a team. And this is for me very important, to make the club proud, the fans proud, the family proud. This is the way how we want to play. We want to enjoy.
Hansi Flick's starting 11 is Wojciech Szczęsny in goal, a back four of Gerard Martin, Inigo Martinez, Pau Cubarsí and Eric Garcia. It's Pedri and Frenkie de Jong in midfield, Dani Olmo into 10, Rafinha on the left, Lamine Yamal on the right, Ferran Torres up front for Inter Milan. It's Jan Sommer in goal, a back three of Jan Bisek, Acerbi and Bastoni. You've got Dumfries and DeMarco on the wings. It's Barella, Çalhanoğlu, Mkhitaryan in midfield, and that front two of Lautaro Martinez and Marcus Thuram up front. This was just such a good game last week.
It was one of the best games I ever saw. Like, I was at home for it last week. It wasn't in the office, and I remember watching it kind of thinking, you know, it's rare enough I'm at home on a weekday. I watched the first half and was like, you know, I'll put it on the phone and, you know, we'll have watch some Netflix or whatever. Yeah. And it was like, the first half was so good, I was like, there's no way I'm turning this off. This is going on the big TV, you know, it was just unbelievable. But I don't think we're remarking enough about how, like, depleted Barcelona are. It's funny because there's so much focus on, you know, the superstar of the game that, like, Lamine Yamal, if he wasn't already, became last week. But, you know, that back four is, there's nobody left really, you know, and you don't have Lewandowski. It'd be kind of incredible if they actually do go to the San Siro and win tonight, but we're kind of all expecting it somehow, even though Inter might be a better team than them.
Totally. The conversation on Barcelona the last week has been unbelievably positive, and it's been deservedly so because we witnessed a great individual performance last week from Lamine Yamal. But at the same time, I think not everybody is sure that this is actually going to result in a Champions League final spot for them. Like, drawing 3-3 at home would suggest that you are the outsider.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, given the second leg is in Milan.
Are they missing six starters if they were picking their first 11 today? I think it might be six, maybe five, but yeah, certainly close to it.
Potentially. So that's coming up from 8 o'clock. We'll keep you up to speed throughout the evening on everything that happens in Milan. And as I said, Dan will be in after 9 for the closing stages of that. Where do you want to go next, Cameron?
Well, it's understood that Real Madrid have offered to pay a small fee to Liverpool for the early release of Trent Alexander-Arnold. So the right-back's contract expires at the end of June and discussions are currently ongoing between the two clubs. But the Spanish club want him in the squad for their Club World Cup campaign 16 days before his deal ends. Real could also pay wages owed by the Merseysiders in order to speed up the signing. So they want that done as soon as possible.
The next story is about a fixture movement in the Premier League.
Yeah, Aston Villa's Premier League game against Tottenham has been moved to Friday the 16th of May. So Spurs requested to be moved back from the Sunday to give them time to prepare for a potential appearance in the Europa League final. The Londoners currently have a 3-1 lead heading into the second leg of their last four tie with Bodo Glimt this Thursday. And we must commend Mick for falling on the sword so quickly.
Yeah, no, Mick has got lots of thoughts about this. We'll do that on the football show.
After 9 o'clock. A preview and I'll get to that.
Yeah, we are...
Space.
We are pushed for time, so we do want to get on to one of the big stories over the course of the weekend, Cameron.
Yeah, so Cork dual star Hannah Looney has given her backing to the Dublin and Kilkenny players' protest against wearing skorts at the weekend. So you might remember the players were ordered off the field before the start of their Leinster Camogie semi-final on Saturday to change, having worn shorts initially. Referee Ray Kelly informed the players that the game would be abandoned if the players persisted in wearing shorts. Now, Cork faced Waterford in the Munster Senior Camogie final this weekend, and Looney was speaking to Andrea Gilligan on Lunchtime Live here on News Talk this afternoon and says there are plans for a similar protest this weekend.
I think it is confirmed that Waterford will line out in shorts, but we just need to make an internal decision in Cork how our players feel at the moment. So, but we'll make that decision in the next few days.
If you're told the game's going to be abandoned, will you go back in and change?
I don't know. I don't think so at this point, to be honest. It would be very frustrating to do that, so... Look, we'll just have to see, but I think it's important that we do shine light to it again this weekend while it's up and it's a hot topic. So,
yeah, this story is going nowhere, and I think that the public pronouncements from the Camogie Association this week haven't done anything to other than fan the flames, really, on all of this. Trying to come up with new technology for skorts was not exactly reading the room, and that was a big part of their communication. What'll be interesting here, I'm not sure how much we'll know about this week, is how much support the Cork Camogie players will have from their own county board and from the Camogie powers that be in Cork. Because I know that when we look back on Congress in 2024, there wasn't a real sense that Cork were to the forefront of change.
Yeah, we get the sense anyway that Cork had voted against it, or at least some delegates did. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, as you say, as Hannah Looney says there, the idea of the match being abandoned because players won't wear skirts kind of shows the farce that we're in, you know, like that the games can obviously not take place without the referees, but it can't take place without players either. And I don't know what your organisation wants to be or what it's doing, if it's in a position where it's forcing players to do this for what, like, you know, this is the rules of our game, but ultimately what is it for other than a power battle, you know, a power struggle between the two forces? And, you know, if you're going to die on a hill of forcing women to wear skirts, and as, you know, has been talked about, Aisling Mar talked about with Shane, the only place in her life as a woman where she's told to wear a skirt is on a Camogie pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're in like deep farcical territory. And I think, like, the only thing I can say about the Camogie Association is that its demise can't come fast enough, and this isn't the only example of it. And hopefully we'll be in a position in 2-3 years, or whenever it actually ends up happening, when the amalgamation and the happens with the GEA, and I finally think Camogie players can actually be looked after in the way that they deserve to be, because there's 3 organisations running Gaelic games in this country, and 2 of them know what they're doing and one of them doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. This is a story that we'll be covering as a show tomorrow evening, and Off the Ball Breakfast have some great pieces coming up throughout this week as well. They're going to be speaking to Sarah Donovan. They're going to be speaking to Tess Howard as well on the show this week. She's a Team GB Olympian and the founder of Inclusive Sportswear. So she's led the successful campaign for international hockey to change their clothing. So that's going to be really interesting to get an international perspective on a story that's not too dissimilar. But that's the big thing to keep an eye on this week. Waterford versus Cork. How's that going to fall? Because that's the next
so interesting. Step. Like, yeah.
Cameron, we've got time for maybe one more. We should do something from the Leinster camp here.
Yeah, Caelan Doris' hopes of making Andy Farrell's Lions squad have suffered a significant blow. So the Leinster and Ireland captain was forced off with a shoulder injury midway through the second half of their Champions Cup semi-final defeat to Northampton. The Irish Independent reported today that he underwent surgery and could be out for 4 to 6 months. The Leinster assistant coach Jack Nienemaar didn't give a specific time frame on his recovery, but he isn't overly optimistic either.
In the last couple of months that I've worked with Caelan, he's not a guy that necessarily comes off a pitch with the injury. So when I subjectively saw him coming off the pitch on Saturday, in my mind I thought that must be quite serious. So like I say, we'll probably know more to the back end of the week. But my gut, and it's only my gut, says that I think it might be serious, but fingers crossed it might not be.
Yeah, really bad news there for Caelan Doris if the severity of that is confirmed, and this summer's tour to Australia is not going to be an option for him. Cameron Hill, thank you for tonight's news round. Mick, we'll be chatting to you later on the football show. That is tonight's news round.
Off the ball, rugby.
Pretty incredible. Only Johnny Sexton really could do this. And look, I know he was a de facto coach anyway. You know, I would imagine there's a few coaches out there whose noses are probably out of joint by this.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.